Welcome to the Norris Group's Real Estate Radio Show. Hosted by author, investor, hard money lender, and real estate educator, Bruce Norris. Equipping California real estate professionals for tomorrow's challenges.
Hi, thank you for joining us. My name is Bruce Norris. Today our guest again is Sean O'Toole, president and founder of Foreclosure Radar. Prior to launching Foreclosure Radar, Sean successfully purchased and flipped more than 150 residential and commercial foreclosures. Leveraging 15 years in the software industry, Sean used technology as a key competitive advantage to build his successful real estate investment track record. Sean, welcome back.
Oh, thanks for having me.
I look at the charts of foreclosures all the time, and I look at the delinquencies, and those two still don't add up to me. So I just wanted to get your sense of what you think 2011 might look like by the end of the year. Are we going to see a growth in the REOs of any substance?
I really don't believe so. And it's not that we shouldn't see a big growth. We should. But, you know, since September 2008, when we kind of the financial world changed as we know it, you know, foreclosures have been just trickling out. And I think it has a lot more to do with, you know, bank and financial institution solvency than it does with, you know, cleaning up the housing market and getting us back into a position of solid equity.
What's the length of time now from, say, a first payment not made to an actual trustee sale? Are you familiar with that?
You know, we do track the period of time that it's actually in the foreclosure process, so from the notice of default forward.
Yes.
And that's up now in California, it's up to 285 days as of January. And we saw that period of time a little bit in 2010, but that's, you know, pretty long. It's only supposed to take 120 days. So, and then you add the delinquency period on top of that, and I was just looking to see if I have those numbers handy, and I don't. But
It's got to be 180. It's got to be 180 days from a payment being missed. Easy.
At least, actually, average days delinquent as of 2010 is 334 days. On top of the 285.
So
that's from LPS, Lender Processing Services. So the average days delinquent for, is 334 days. So it's a long period of time.
It is a long period of time. Now, there's some bills being suggested right now to end some of the programs, Home Affordability Modification, that HAMP, and also Neighborhood Stabilization Program. So there's bills trying to say, you know what, these things didn't work, let's end them. Do you see them ending? And if they end, it seems likely that they'd have to chase the property.
You know, I think those programs have been largely irrelevant from the beginning. The Neighborhood Stabilization Program, if you look at the billions of dollars that have been dedicated to that, I mean, that's, you're talking about, you know, like I forget the exact numbers, but in California, the total amount of money given to neighborhood stabilization was the equivalent of about 1 week of foreclosures in California, right? It's just a meaningless sum, even though, you know, it's one of these things regularly we see in these headlines, you know, $25 billion settlement. You know, $25 billion is not very much money when you talk about, you know, I think $4 trillion of excess mortgage debt in the United States.
Yeah, it's a drop in the bucket. Do you see now? Let's go back to your website for just a second. What's the newest? You always are improving. And the one thing I noticed was a short sale.
Sale report.
Yeah, and that's real important because not all lenders are treating short sales the same. That's for sure.
Yeah. So it's just something that we added to our learning center. Basically, we wanted to give primarily realtors, but also homeowners, a way to see, you know, is their lender approving short sales or not? You know, what things are working or not? We've tried to encourage realtors and others to go there and comment, And I think we're going to be promoting that a lot more this year because we think it's a really important resource. You know, Wachovia was really good at approving short sales last year, and realtors that focused on Wachovia deals did a lot more deals than other folks. And, you know, that we think that will kind of consistently ebb and tide and change, and you'll see some lenders make a push and then stop the push, and you want to be able to take advantage of that. And if you're a homeowner, you want to see, you know, what your chances are.
Also, is there an appraisal service that you just started, or was it a title report?
Yeah, we've added a bunch of new kind of title-related services, basically to make it easier to go through when you're an auction investor, mm-hmm. figure out what the state of the property is. So we have links to the county indexes, and we've got some webinars and stuff that train you on how to go look up different title issues and figure out whether you're bidding on a first or a second, which is critical because you don't buy the property at a trustee sale. You buy the loan position. So if you buy a second, you still owe the first. Or if you buy an HOA lien, you got to pay off the first and the second. So it's a really critical skill set, and we've tried to make that easier by adding a bunch of features, the ability to purchase the document images, et cetera, right in the site.
Okay. Has the price range of the homes changed in the last year that are being foreclosed on?
Yeah. You know, we kind of keep waiting for this to move kind of up market and have more of the high end. But, you know, we're not really seeing that. We're seeing the average, you know, opening bid of in January 2011, it was $254,000. You know, and at the beginning of the year, it was 261. So it seems to be around, you know, 260K mark. And in terms of the debt on the property, 397 at the beginning of the year, 385 in terms of the loan being foreclosed on. So, no, we haven't seen any big changes in the mix of inventory that's being foreclosed on. Now, if we dive in a little bit, we see that the percentage of growth is higher in the higher end homes mm-hmm. than it is in the lower end homes, but those higher end homes are such a small percentage overall of the total that they really haven't impacted the averages.
Okay, the 254 that you mentioned as an opening bid, is that a drop bid that was probably successfully purchased, or that's just the average that's opening bid, no matter purchased or REO?
It, no matter which way. So, you know, about 80% of those end up going to the bank. So at that average, it's a little too high for your average person to buy. So if you look at the opening bids specifically, you know, you typically for the bank, it's about 30%. It's about 15% above market value. So,
okay.
On average, when the properties go back to the bank, it's because they've dropped the bid, but the bid that they've dropped is still 15% above market value, versus the one purchased by third parties are on average right now almost 25% below market value.
What percentage then is the lender taking as far as the hit they're taking? What percentage do they lose if they're successfully getting these properties sold at the trustee sale?
If they're successfully, you know, it's about 43% below what they're owed.
Okay.
When they successfully sell them at the trustee sale. So it's a big hit, and that doesn't include losses that a second might incur. I mean, we're still seeing, you know, the properties that go to sale in California almost 50% below what they're worth. And this is why, you know, coming back to all these programs, you know, like HAMP and the rest that they're talking about killing in the Senate. I mean, those programs have been almost completely ineffective. So at least in the high negative equity states like California and Florida, because they just don't address the problem. You know, the problem isn't that people need to be able to afford their payment over the next 5 years. The problem is, you know, they're 50% underwater. And even if they can't afford their payment for the next 5 years, when that payment adjusts back to a full rate, you know, there's just no chance their income's going to double over that period of time to be able to afford it then.
And you know, when you sign up for something like that, let's say you agree to a loan mod, that's your life situation right then may say that I can cope with this, but then you get laid off. So unemployment throws another monkey into the wrench, if you will.
Yeah, it sure does. It sure does. You know, life events happen, and this is one of my problems with the whole loan modification that's a payment-focused only solution from the beginning is, you know, life events happen. You know, you get job, it's not just unemployment, it's job transfers, it's, folks die, you know, you have to move to help a parent. You know, there's lots of things that can happen that force you to move or relocate. And if you're 50% upside down, you don't have really any options unless you can get a short sale approved.
Have the lenders figured out where they net the most? If they do a drop bid, they do a short sale, or they take it to an REO?
You know, they definitely spend some time on analysis of that, but I don't really think it matters a whole lot where the best outcome is. And this is where we've got, you know, we just have kind of a perverse system at this point where, you know, I don't think it's really clear to anyone where the losses actually, you know, end up and who's responsible for them and who's motivated to try to mitigate them. We have a lot of stuff now controlled by servicers who don't necessarily take the hit on the losses directly themselves, and yet they're making the decisions.
Well, you know, it's interesting. You, because I'm in a way, I'm a servicer. We service a lot of loan payments. In that document of the servicing agreement, I am given some authority, but mostly I would say if it came down to a principal reduction, I sure would have to ask the holder of the loan. Are there servicing agreements that literally give the servicer the right to do that, take the hit?
No, I think that that's one of the issues is that in a lot of cases they probably don't. I know that investors and others have worked, you know, on that. There was just a story today, you know, out talking about, this FHA program for short refis. And one of the big issues there is that, you've got an issue where, you know, Bank of America came out and basically said, well, look, the investor on half of our loans is Fannie and Freddie. It's the federal government, right?
Right.
And so you have, on the one hand, the Obama administration saying, look, we should do short refis and, you know, get people back into, you know, their house at an affordable level and payment and the rest. On the other hand, though, you have the fact that Fannie and Freddie are under conservatorship, and as part of that, their job is to, you know, maintain that equity. And so you really can't, their mandate on the other side is not to approve short refis. You know, so you get these two things that are completely at odds. And, we can't even resolve them at that level, even when they're federally owned. So it's a mess. There's no question.
There's a 30-some page document that just came out that I read, and it's talking about the future of financing. And it's definitely the goal of this document was to let people know that there'll be a day where Fannie and Freddie, they would prefer not to exist at all. So that's from the president to Congress. Let's work this out, change the financing to where it goes pretty much to the private sector.
You know, and I think that would actually be a really good thing. You know, I'm not a fan of our current zero interest rate policy. I think, you know, bigger issue than keeping interest rates low to spur our economy is the fact that we've got baby boomers about to retire, and they can't make a decent living on fixed income in a zero interest rate, you know, environment. And if we could bring some stability back to housing and reasonable interest rates, then if you spend your life, you know, working to retire and putting some money aside, then you can invest in something relatively safe, like mortgages, and get a decent return. I think the sooner we get back to that world, the better.
Yeah, I've thought about that. You know, you could have saved $1 million, and if you put it in something that didn't have any risk, like a T-bill, you know, you'd be living off of, what,
30 grand a 30, year?
30 grand a year or so? Yeah, that isn't how you thought it would end up, that's for sure.
I mean, you look at the number of people facing that right now and how many more will be facing it right at the same time that Social Security is running out. I mean, that's the biggest crisis, I think, facing this nation right now.
Is all the future debt promises, yeah.
Yeah, pensions and the rest. I mean, at the state, municipal, at every level, we've promised way more than we can deliver.
Well,
and we have no way to make a decent return on our money because of a zero interest rate environment.
It is interesting when you watch the news that's been unfolding in other countries, how quickly things can change. And, you know, you've got one state in particular right now in our country deciding to, you know, try to change the rules and get people to take hits and so forth. And it's not going over well. And so you definitely could have some unrest coming. You know, it's just that environment definitely feels like it could be contentious, no doubt about it.
Well, you take a look at what happened in, you know, Ireland over the weekend, where basically they said, look, no, you're not going to monetize this debt and put it on the backs of taxpayers. You know, we'd rather declare bankruptcy. And, you know, I think is the gist of what, you know, came across there. And I think there was a paper out by a bunch of university professors in Germany basically saying, look, instead of monetizing this debt that's unsustainable, you know, maybe we need to default on it, or maybe these, you know, countries that get in this trouble should default on it. You know, that's an ugly situation, but, you know, if you're going to be a lender, as you are, Bruce, right, you make loans that I hope, that, and I know, actually, that you can make in good conscience, where you know that you're willing to take the underlying, you know, security.
Sure.
Back, rather than indebt the person, you know, for life in debtor's prison. And, you know, we've got too much debt. I mean, just look at the $14 trillion, you know, here in the U.S. right now, right? We have 115 million households, but only half those households pay taxes. So if you look at tax-paying households, we're talking about $120,000 per, you know, tax-paying household in the United States. And of those, you know, 20% probably pay 80% of the taxes. So it's a pretty staggering amount of debt that we have in the U.S. I think one could argue now that there's no possible way for us to pay it back.
I think that's probably true, and we're in an interest rate environment where the interest cost on that $14 trillion is pretty minor compared to what it could be.
Or probably what it should be.
Yeah. Well, I know your gold and silver stuff is working out pretty good. getting back to foreclosures, commercial, are you seeing an increase there? We just bought a commercial building, by the way.
Yeah, I'd like to, too. I wish there was something available locally.
So is that, do you see increasing foreclosures on commercial buildings?
You know, again, kind of like on the residential side, you know, the banks right now are incentivized basically to try to push this stuff down the road rather than take the losses. And, you know, you know, one could argue that it's for good reason. You know, the FDIC is essentially, I think, insolvent, or would be insolvent if they really had to clean up, you know, some of these banks based on, you know, prior rules where they force them to clean up non-performing assets in a timely manner. And so they're no longer doing that. And we've changed the accounting rules from mark, you know, to market, which is basically keeping the assets on the books at fair market value, and changed it to mark to model, where they can come up with some model that says these assets are going to increase in value in the future and everything's going to be fine. And therefore set aside less, you know, lower loan loss reserves, which, again, in the news lately, you just had Bank of America and Citi and Wells all coming out saying, you know, hey, look, we've probably under-reserved and, you know, set aside some more money.
Well, you know, it's interesting when you have a market that's artificial. So you have a delinquency rate that went up, you know, to record numbers, and then in the last 2 years basically had the foreclosures decline. Any any conclusion that you can make has to be skewed somewhat because you're not dealing with the reality of the situation. There's this big ball of problems churning behind the scenes all the time.
Yeah, and I think it comes back to, you know, look, we went from nationally, right, kind of a 45%, you know, debt to equity ratio. So we had $4.5 million worth of residential mortgage debt on, or $4.5 trillion on $10 trillion worth of real estate. And, you know, at the peak, we went to, I think, $11.5 trillion in mortgage debt, or 11.5, somewhere in there, 10.5, the mortgage debt on a supposed, you know, $20 trillion in market value. But, you know, that market value was fictitious. We're back down to 13, but we still have probably 10 of the $10.5 trillion in debt. And if you looked at how much incomes increased over that time or how many new households were created, you know, I think we created about $4 trillion in excess debt, mortgage debt, that we fundamentally don't have the income, household income as a nation to afford. You know, and so now, you know, we've got millions of homeowners underwater. Just in California, we're talking, you know, 2.8 million homeowners that are, either have negative equity or don't have enough equity to sell their house and pay commissions. You know, and that's out of 6.9. It's 40% of homeowners with a mortgage. You know, you have states like Nevada where the loan-to-value ratio
it's 123%.
123,
so they, oh my goodness.
Yeah, they owe 23% more on collectively as a state in their mortgages than the real estate's worth. You know, that's a problem, and it's a problem that we haven't really dealt with at all. And, you know, as much as on the one hand it seems like, oh my gosh, they're killing programs that could help, those programs haven't helped. Better off to kill them and either start working on something that will help or at least not waste everybody's time on something that won't.
The next big pile of foreclosures or REOs seems to me going to be coming from HUD, unless they decide not to foreclose on those people as well. So that's one of the programs you were talking about is they're doing a short sale refi to keep the people in.
FHA had a program that was launched last year and nobody really implemented on a short sale refi, and it basically required the lender to take at least a 10% hit. It required a loan to value of 115%. So, in other words, FHA would provide a government backed or government insured or government insurance on a loan up to 115% in value of what the value was on the house to refi somebody out as long as the lender took a 10% hit in principal. And, you know, they've had a hard time getting that program off the ground. Some of the servicers are getting close, you know, right at the time now they're talking about killing the program. But, you know, like Bank of America's spokesperson said, you know, we're not likely to really go after this program unless Fannie and Freddie, you know, commit to principal balance reductions. And the problem for Fannie and Freddie is, even though they're now, you know, government-backed as part of that conservatorship, you know, the job of the conservator is to preserve capital for the taxpayer, you know, which is at odds with the needs of the homeowner, which is they're not going to stay unless the principal is reduced. I think the one piece missing in that whole equation is that sticking your head in the sand and saying we won't reduce principal won't necessarily, in the end, result in lower losses. I think that's wishful thinking.
Okay. Well, we got about 30 seconds left. I'm going to say your website, foreclosureradar.com. Sean, thanks so much for joining us. Let me ask you this. Are you optimistic for real estate being at least priced flat this year, or do you see declines?
I think we'll see some near-term declines, but I'm a believer in being a holder of real estate because I think the only way out of this debt problem is going to be ultimately inflation, despite what the Fed is currently saying. And I think real estate's a good hedge in inflationary times.
Sean, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the Norris Group Real Estate Radio Show. For more information on the Norris Group, please visit www.thenorrisgroup.com.